He didn't laugh. Quentin would appreciate that later. Upstate? Quentin said. Like Vassar? I saw you come through, the young man said. Come on. You need to go up to the house. He snapped the cigarette away and set off across the wide lawn. He didn't look back to see if Quentin was following, which at first Quentin didn't. But then a sudden fear of being left alone in this place got him moving, and he trotted to catch up. The green was enormous, the size of half a dozen football fields. It seems to take them forever to get across it. The sun beat on the back of Quentin's neck. So, what's your name? The young man asked, in a tone that made sure that Quentin knew that he had no interest in answer. Quentin. Charming. From? Brooklyn. How old? 17. I'm Elliot. Don't tell me anything else. I don't want to know. Don't want to get attached. Quentin had to take a couple of double time steps to keep up with Elliot. There was something about Elliot's face. His posture was very straight, but his mouth was twisted to one side in a permanent half grimace that revealed the nest of teeth sticking both in and out at improbable angles. He looked like a child who had been slightly misdelivered, with some sabar forceps handling by attending. But despite his odd appearance, Elliot had an air of effortless self-possession. Self-possession that made Quentin urgently want to be his friend. Maybe just to be him, period. He was obviously one of those people who felt at home in the world. He was naturally buoyant, where Quentin felt like he had to dog paddle constantly, exhaustingly, humiliatingly, just to get one up of air. One sip of air. So what is this place? Quentin asked. Do you live here? You mean here at Breakbills? He said airily. Yeah, I guess I do. They had reached the far side of the grass. You can tell, if you can call it living. Elliot led Quentin through a gap in tall hedge and into a leafy, shadowy labyrinth. The bushes had been trimmed precisely into narrow branching, frantically ramifying corridors that periodically opened into small shady alcoves and courtyards. The shrubbery was so dense that no light penetrated through it, but here and there a heavy yellow stripe of sun fell across the path from above. They passed plashing fountain. Here a somber, rain-ravaged white stone statue there. It was a good 5 minutes before they stepped out of the maze through an opening flanked by two towering topiary bears reared up on their hind legs onto a stone terrace in the shadow of the large house Quentin had seen from a distance. A breeze made one of the tall leafy bears seem to turn its head slightly in his direction. The dean will probably be down to get you in another minute, Elliot said. Here's my advice. Sit there, he pointed to weathered stone bench like he was telling an overly affectionate dog to stay, and try to look like you belong here. And if you tell him you saw me smoking, I will banish you to the lowest circle of hell. I've never been here, never been there, but even half of what I hear is true, it's almost as bad as Brooklyn. Elliot disappeared back into hedge maze, and Quentin sat down obediently on the bench. He stared down between his shiny black interview shoes and the gray stone tiles, his backpack and his overcoat in his lap. This is impossible, he thought lucidly. He thought the words in his mind, but they got no purchase on the world around him. He felt like he was having an unpleasant drug experience. The tiles were intricately carved with a pattern of twiny vines, or possibly elaborately calligraphic words that had been worn away into legibility. Little motes and seeds drifted around in the sunlight. If this is a hallucination, he thought, it's pretty damn high res. The silence was the strangest part of it. As hard as he listened, he couldn't hear a single car. It felt like he was in a movie where the soundtrack had abruptly cut out. A pair of French doors rattled a few times and then opened. A tall, fat man wearing a seersucker suit strode into the terrace. "Good afternoon," he said. "You would be Quentin Coldwater." He spoke very correctly, as if he wished he had an English accent, but wasn't quite pretentious enough to affect one. He had a mild, open face and thin blonde hair. Yes, sir, Quentin had never called an adult or anybody else sir in his life, but it suddenly felt appropriate. "Welcome to Breakbills College," the man said. "I suppose you heard of us." "Actually, no," Quentin said. "Well, you've been offered a preliminary examination here. Do you accept?" Quentin didn't know what to say. This wasn't one of the questions he had prepared for when he got up this morning. "I don't know," he said, blinking. "I mean, I guess I'm not sure." "Perfectly understandable response, but not acceptable one, I'm afraid." "Yeah, I need yes or no." "It's just for the exam," he added helpfully. Quentin had a powerful intuition that if he said no, all of this would be over before a syllable was even fully out of his mouth, and he would be left standing in the cold rain and dog shit of First Step Street, wondering why he seemed to feel the warmth of the sun on the back of his neck for the second just then. He wasn't ready for that, not yet. "Sure, okay," he said, not wanting to sound too eager. "Yeah, splendid." He was one of those superficially jolly people whose jolliness didn't quite reach all the way up to his eyes. "Let's get you examined. My name is Henry Fogg. No jokes, please. I've heard them all. And you may address me as Dean. Follow me. You're the last one to arrive, I think," he added. No jokes actually came to Quentin's mind. Inside the house, it was hushed and cool, and there was a rich, spicy smell to the air of books and oriental carpets and old wood and tobacco. The dean walked ahead of him impatiently. It took Quentin a minute for his eyes to adjust. They hurried along in a sitting room hung with murky oil paintings, down a narrow wood-paneled hallway, then up several flights of stairs to a heavy timbered wooden door. The instant it opened, hundreds of eyes flickered up and fixed themselves on Quentin. The room was long and airy and full of individual wooden desks arranged in row. At each desk sat a serious-looking teenager. It was a classroom, but not the kind Quentin was used to, where the walls were cider block and covered with bulletin boards and posters with kittens hanging from branches with "Hang on in there, baby." Under them, in balloon letters. The walls of this room were old stone. It was full of sunlight, and it stretched back and back and back. It looked like a street with mirrors. Most of the kids were Quentin's age and appeared to occupy the same general stratum of coolness or lack thereof, but not all. There were few punks with mohawks and shaved heads, and there was substantial got contingent, and one of those super Jews, a Hasid. A too tall girl with two big red framed glasses beamed goofily at everybody. Few of the younger girls looked like they'd been crying. One kid had no shirt on and green and red tattoos all over his back. Jesus, Quentin thought. Whose parents would let them do that? Another one was in motorized wheelchair. Another was missing his left arm. He wore a dark button-down shirt with one sleeve folded up and held closely with silver clasp. All the desks were identical, and on each one an ordinary blank blue test booklet was laid out with very thin, very sharp number 3 pencil next to it. It was the first thing Quentin had seen here that was familiar. There was one empty seat toward the back of the room, and he sat down and scooched his chair forward with a deafening screech. He almost thought he saw Julia's face in among the crowd, but she turned away almost immediately, and anyway there was no time. At front of the room, Dean Fogg cleared his throat primly. "All right," he said. "Few preliminaries. There will be a silence during the examination. You are free to look at other students' paper, but you will find that they appear to you to be blank. Your pencils will not require additional sharpening. If you would like a glass of water, just hold up three fingers above your head like this," he demonstrated. "Do not worry about feeling unprepared for the examination. There is no way to study for it, though it would be equally true to say that you have been preparing for it your whole life. There's only two possible grades, pass and fail. If you pass, you will proceed to the second stage of examination. If you fail, most of you will. You will be returned to your homes with a plausible alibi and very little memory of this entire experience. Oh, duration of the test is 2.5 hours long. Begin." The dean turned to the blackboard and drew a clock face on it. Quentin looked down at the blank booklet on his desk. It was no longer blank. It was filling with questions. The letters literally swarm into being on paper as he watched. The room filled with a collective rustling of paper, like a flock of birds taking off. Heads bowed in unison. Quentin recognized this motion. It was motion of a bunch of high-powered typed test killers getting down to their bloody work. That was all right. He was one of them. Quentin hadn't planned on spending the rest of his afternoon or morning, or whatever this was, taking a standardized test on the unknown subject at an unknown educational institution in some unknown alternate climatic zone where it was still summer. He was supposed to be in Brooklyn freezing his ass off and being interviewed by some random senior citizen currently deceased. But the logic of these immediate circumstances was overwhelming. His other concerns, however, well-founded they might be. He had never been one to argue with logic. A lot of tests was calculus, pretty basic stuff for Quentin, who was so mysteriously good at math that his high school had been forced to outsource that part of his education to Brooklyn College. Nothing more hazardous than some fancy differential geometry and few linear algebra proofs. But there were more exotic questions too. Some of them seemed totally pointless. One showed him back of playing card, not an actual card, but a drawing of the back of the playing card, mind you, featuring your standard twin angels riding bicycles, and asked him to guess what card it was. How did that make sense? Or later, on the test, gave him a passage from The Tempest, then asked him to make up fake language and then translate the Shakespeare into the made-up language. He was then asked questions about the grammar and orthography of this made-up language, and then honestly, what was the point? Questions about made-up geography and culture and society of the made-up country where his made-up language was so fluently spoken. He had to translate the original passage from the fake language back into English, paying particular attention to any resulting distortions in grammar, word choice, and meaning. Seriously, he always gave everything he had on test, but in this case, he was totally sure he wasn't supposed to give. He wasn't totally sure what he was supposed to give. The test also changed as he took it. The reading comprehension section showed him a paragraph that vanished as he read it, then quizzed him on its contents. some new kind of computerized paper. Fuck. Hadn't he read somewhere that somebody was working on that? Digitaling? Amazing resolution, though. He was asked to draw a rabbit that wouldn't keep still as he drew it. As soon as it had paused, it scratched itself luxuriously and then went hopping off around the page, nibbling at the other questions, so that he had to chase it with the pencil to finish filling in the fur. He wound up pacifying it with some hastily sketched radishes. Oh, fuck, fuck. Fuck. And then drawing a fence around it to keep it in line.